Hi, friends. Tim Viegas here from MCIE with a pre-season bonus episode. As I was preparing for season 11 of Think Inclusive, I found an old interview I did with a really fascinating person, Tawny Halsworth. I think we originally recorded it to be part of my newsletter, The Weekly-ish, but it just never got produced. Sorry, Tawny. But now, it gets new life as a bonus, just for you, dear listener. And if this is the first time you've ever listened to Think Inclusive and you're like, what is this pod? I am not sure if I like this. I would listen to the last episode of season 10, where I interview Carolyn Teagland and Carol Quirk. We talk about the mission of the Maryland Coalition for Inclusive Education and some success stories from the past year. It's a great listen, and it really sets up what we are trying to do with this pod going forward, which is to bring people together from all different backgrounds to create a shared understanding of what inclusive education really means. For this episode, my guest is Tawny Halsworth, a content designer for inclusive classroom tools at Microsoft. She shares her journey from being a paraprofessional for students with disabilities to working at Woodland Park Zoo and eventually joining Microsoft. She discusses the importance of inclusion and diversity in volunteer programs and highlights the impact of her work at the zoo, including a story of a volunteer with autism who went on to become a paid staff member. Tawny also talks about her role at Microsoft, where she focuses on making products more accessible and inclusive for all learners. After a short break, my interview with Tawny Halsworth.
I'm Tawny Halsworth. My pronouns are she, her. And right now I'm a content designer for inclusive classroom tools at Microsoft.
So how long have you been doing that working for Microsoft?
For Microsoft, I'm coming up on like 2 years.
Okay. And has it been all like inclusive classroom tools?
Yep. I was hired specifically to work on the set of inclusive classroom tools that they are building and have built. Some of the things like you might be familiar with are immersive reader or reading progress, math assistant. We're building a product called Reflect that helps people share their like emotions with their educators and trying to tap into that SEL part of kind of seeing the whole student. So those are some of the big like main projects that we're working on right now.
Okay. And tell me your background. Were you an educator or?
Yeah. So when I first got out of college, I was a paraprofessional for students with severe profound disabilities for about 7 years. Wow. I did it in Fort Collins, Colorado for a while at a school that was like really progressive at the time for like what inclusion is. I don't know that we would call it super progressive like these days, but it was a leader at the time. Then I moved to Denver and worked at a school that had like a way more segregated special education program. We're in the back corner of the building and got forgotten about a lot. Had maybe 15% inclusion in that school. And it really made me feel like I wanted to go back to school and kind of be able to push back against that. As a paraeducator, didn't have a lot of space for pushback. So I went back to school and then got my master's with the intent of being a general education teacher who had this experience with people with disabilities and was ready to like invite them into my classroom because I know how hard it is for special education teachers to flip that on its head and say like, please like invite these kids, support these kids. They deserve to be in your class. You know how the education system is, and it was pretty burnt out by the time I got done with school and was really excited about moving into a space where I could help with inclusion without dealing with the politics of the school system. And so that's when I got to work at Woodland Park Zoo. And help build an inclusive volunteer program there. So you're have bounced all over the place.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm just trying to figure out your path here. So your path was paraeducator or paraprofessional, however y'all say it, because people say it differently, right?
Yeah.
And then you went back to school wanting to become a teacher, like a general education classroom teacher, and then you detoured into working. So that was in Seattle.
Yeah. So I moved to Seattle so that I could support that program.
So you moved to Seattle for the program at the zoo?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So tell me more about that. So, how did that even start?
Yeah. So, the zoo was really looking to build a more inclusive volunteer program. I think you can imagine, like, volunteer programs, a lot of the time they're really mostly privileged, like white, elderly, retired folks who have the time and the privilege to volunteer, which is wonderful, but they're not very diverse, and it can be alienating to guests to only have volunteers that are, you know, elderly white folks. And so the zoo kind of recognized that and was like, okay, we want to take some steps to make this volunteer program more diverse. Like, what barriers are in the way of that happening? And they decided to take on including more folks with disabilities as like a first step to making that volunteer program more diverse. So they applied for a Institute of Museum and Library Sciences grant to support that program. So that's how I got funded to work full time on the project. And then we had funding to run, what are they called? Focus groups. Mm-hmm. and kind of run a coalition of folks to provide feedback and continue to build and iterate on the program so that we could make it work for folks with disabilities.
And this started in 2000?
Started in 2018, yeah.
And so I might have, maybe I missed it. So I apologize if I wasn't listening. The Library Science Grant, the Institute on Museum Library Science, is that? Yeah, mm-hmm. Service or the grant. So how are you involved with the Institute of Museum and Library Services?
So the grant was issued to the zoo, and that paid me for my salary and just being able to work at the zoo and advise and run this program. And then I managed the grant and the budget and all of that kind of stuff to see what we could do and what we could accomplish.
Gotcha. Yeah. So you were in Colorado, and did you like, were you just like, what am I going to do next? And then you found this opportunity?
Yeah, it was a great opportunity. Perfect match.
So you moved to Seattle to help facilitate and start this. And so how long were you there?
So it started in 2018, and then obviously we had COVID in 2020. So the idea was the IMLS grant was supposed to last for 2 years, but the zoo had committed to like just investing in inclusion and having a person that was the accessibility inclusion kind of expert full time indefinitely. But then 2020 happened. And I got laid off. So the intent was for it to be longer, but I was there for 2 years.
Has the program continued?
The program has continued. There's somebody there that's supporting it now. They got a second letters grant that is supporting building, making the zoo more accessible for guests as well. So just really going through and making those physical and like programmatic changes to make everything more multimodal so that people can engage with it no matter how they engage with things.
Yeah. So I find this really interesting because the museums or zoos that I've been to that have made an effort towards like inclusion, usually that's the kind of thing that we're talking about, like making things more accessible, whether the content is more accessible or the physical space is more accessible. But I have yet to hear about what was originally proposed about having, you know, diversity in the volunteers, or you know, my mom used to call those people docents. Do people call docents anymore?
Yeah. So we kind of had a setup at the zoo there that had two levels of volunteers. We had volunteers and we had docents.
Okay.
Docents tends to, well, they take a lot of classes to be a docent. Okay. And so there's like a certain amount of like prestige with it. It's definitely, you know, they dedicate a certain amount of hours and they have a lot of knowledge, which is awesome. Yeah. We also have volunteers at the zoo that just help people like navigate. They just walk around, they answer questions, they tell people where the bathroom is or where their favorite animal is or what the animal's names are. And really, for like most folks that go to visit the zoo, that's kind of what they're looking for. Like, they don't really want to talk for 20 minutes to somebody about animal bones, especially when we're talking about like little kids. Like,
right.
They're going from one exhibit to the next. They're on their way. So we have a lot of volunteers that that are just kind of providing those basic supports, like handing out maps, doing all these kinds of things. So there's so many opportunities for people with like any level of disability to participate in that, just in the way that suits them the best. So I had people who were coming in and just providing hand sanitizer after kids had the chance to like pet turtles or something like that. And that was their one task and they loved it. And they made kids laugh and like gave them hand sanitizer every day. And I had people who are like super hyper into giraffes and would go and stand by the giraffe exhibit all day and like talk to people about giraffes and what their names are and where they came from, and had every detail about each giraffe's life memorized. So there's so many opportunities for like different types of people with disabilities to participate in the way that really made them shine.
Yeah, that sounds like a fantastic opportunity. Yeah, that is wonderful. Is there any particular story about your experience at Woodland Park Zoo that comes to mind? Like, if I said, what was the most amazing thing that you ever saw at Woodland Park Zoo while you were there?
Yeah, I mean, I think the most exciting thing that happened for us is we had a volunteer. There was a volunteer who has autism and volunteered with a family member before the program had started. So they interviewed together. They told them, you know, this volunteer has autism. Like, I'd like to come with them and we'll provide the support. We'll do everything. And that worked out well for them before the program. But unfortunately, their family member got sick and couldn't continue to support them coming to the zoo. And so at that point, they kind of fell off the radar and weren't volunteering anymore. And I went to kind of talk to the supervisor of the program and see, you know, is there a reason why this person needs to volunteer with their family member? Can we bring them back in? What kind of support could we get them so that they can come back? Because we know that they've been successful in their previous volunteer. They said, well, they just never have volunteered without their family member. And it's like, oh, I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean they can't do it. It just means they haven't. So let's try it out. And we got their job coach involved. They came to the zoo and went a couple times with their job coach. And it was evident within like a day, they don't need anybody to support them. Like, they can come volunteer at the zoo all by themselves. Not a problem. Which was really interesting. It was interesting to see that like some sort of just like mental barrier had been put up. That this person wasn't capable, even though there was no like indication that they weren't. And that came, you know, from their own family and from the volunteer program. It wasn't that the volunteer program just said like, no, you're disabled, you can't be here. But you know, the family member didn't think that they could do it on their own.
¿Buscas las ofertas de Early Black Friday en Lowe's? ¡Estás justo a tiempo! Ahorra hasta 50% en electrodomésticos selectos y hasta 25% extra en combos de electrodomésticos selectos. ¿Estás pensando ya en poner luces navideñas? Aprovecha ahorros de hasta 50% en escaleras selectas. Precios de Black Friday sin las filas de Black Friday. Lowe's, nosotros ayudamos, tú ahorras. Válido hasta el 11/19. Selección varía por tienda, solo en tiendas selectas hasta agotar existencias. Detalles en lowes.com.
So they came and they started doing it on their own. And then, you know, 2 weeks later, they applied for a job at the zoo and interviewed with like bare minimum support from their job coach. And then were preparing meals for the animals just a couple weeks later. So they went from having fallen off the program to being a paid staff member at the zoo within just a couple weeks. And that was like the most exciting thing that ever happened.
That is exciting. That's really exciting. Wow. What did it mean for you to, like, I know that one particular story that it seemed like that was just confirmation that this was a good thing for you to be doing. And it kind of reinforced some of the, you know, the things we talk about inclusion, like, you know, presuming competence, right? You know, like we just, you know, don't want to assume a person can't do something when we haven't given them a chance, right? Mm-hmm. Are there any other lessons or things that were reinforced when you had this position?
Yeah, so there's a couple different things. I think when we first got started, the attitude was kind of like, how do we create a track for people with disabilities to join the volunteer program? And I, you know, I came to the zoo and I said, we're not going to create a separate track for people. That's not what inclusion is. We're going to see how we can make the main track more accessible for more people.
Can you just explain what that means? Like what would that have meant? Like, what does that mean, having a track?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, just the process of getting onboarded to be a volunteer. So people have to fill out an application and they come to an info session to kind of confirm that they understand, like, these are the commitments that you're making and we're going to do this much training. And then they have 2 full days of training. And then we're supported by a existing volunteer in like 2 days of being a volunteer so that they can kind of get used to it and see how that works. And that's how it was before I got there, right? And it had been that way for a long time. And we kept it that way because it does have a lot of aspects of it that are really accessible, right? We have the repeated information. We have supported learning opportunities from people who know what they're doing. And those things can help a lot of people. But what we also did was make sure that all of the applications had information on them about, like, here's how you can request accommodation. Here's how you can reach out to get an interpreter or do all of these things so that we were not excluding people from coming to those info meetings or applying. I had, like, for example, one woman who was blind who wasn't able to fill out the application independently. And so she just called me and I did it over the phone and it was super easy. But there had never been, you know, a phone number to call before to be able to kind of get around that. So just something as easy as like providing that information made a really big difference. And then the other piece was just like deciding that the only way to get people comfortable with disability was to just like do it. There's a lot of people and, you know, again, the volunteer program is a lot of elderly folks, right? And so culturally, like people with disabilities were not a part of their school experience, were not a part of their life experience for most people. And there's a level of like fear and hesitation because people just haven't been exposed to that. And so I got a lot of questions about like, well, how are you going to prepare us? You know, what are you, how are you going to train us to be ready for people with disabilities being here? And it's like, well, you know, we'll do some trainings and like, you can come and learn about inclusion and what that looks like and how you can support people, but you're never going to just feel ready, right? Like introducing you to the concepts is not the same as being around people. So it's like, we're bringing people into the program. If you don't like it, like, that's too bad. and it worked out great. And people joined the program. And then it's amazing how fast, like, the trepidation that people were feeling just, like, melted away. It's like, oh, it's everybody is volunteering in their own way. And it doesn't bother anybody else. And it works just great.
Wow. I'm curious, when you were here in Atlanta, did you visit Zoo Atlanta?
Yeah, I volunteered at Zoo Atlanta when I was in Atlanta because I miss being there.
Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to think if they had the, I don't think it was Zoo Atlanta. I think it might have been the Chattanooga Zoo where they had these bags, like these sensory bags.
Yeah, Zoo Atlanta has that too.
It does? They do? Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. I couldn't remember if it was that one or they may both have it, but yeah, this is so great because whenever I talk with anyone about inclusion, that's not in school, that like, that's not specifically like it's all the same, like all the same issues come up, mindset, you know, presuming competence, people being afraid. Like, well, what are they going to do? You know?
Yeah, exactly. What if this happens? It was like, well, we're probably not going to ask somebody to volunteer who like has a trigger that's elephant noises or something like that. Like right. we interview people who volunteer for a reason and we're going to invite the right people to be volunteers. But the requirements for being a volunteer aren't anything to do with how much you know about animals. They aren't anything to do with, you know, how many papers you can write or how much you can lift. Like, that's not what volunteering at the zoo is about. It's, you know, are you able to provide customer service in some manner? Are you able to commit to 6 hours a month? Do you love animals? You know, are you willing to say that you don't know when you don't know something? Then like, great. That's welcome to the team. It's not that complex, but there is, you know, a certain amount of people who kind of felt that like their value as a volunteer was devalued by people with disabilities being a part of the program. And we really had to kind of address that and work on like our internal culture to say, like, that's just not an acceptable attitude to have. Your value is different from somebody else's value, or your contributions are different from somebody else's contributions, but your value isn't different or isn't hierarchical. Nobody has more value than somebody else.
If somebody is listening to this conversation and would say like, ooh, like, well, I want this model to be replicated, you know, like I want this model at Zoo Atlanta. I want this model at the Chattanooga Zoo or in, you know, Birmingham or wherever zoos are. I've been to so many, I just don't remember. Like how do you have any suggestions on how they could maybe suggest this?
Yeah. I mean, I think the first thing to do is really assess your accessibility webpage. And that's the first thing that we did at Woodland Park Zoo. We found that a lot of people didn't perceive the zoo as a place that they could volunteer because it wasn't perceived as just accessible to them in the first place. And that's just because the resources weren't there. You know, there wasn't a map to tell them where the accessible bathrooms were and all of that kind of stuff. And so we went through and improved the webpage. And like I mentioned, like putting in those phone numbers so that people can call and ask and see what's available. So that made a big difference. We changed all our volunteer applications to really reflect what we're actually looking for in a volunteer and be a lot less kind of like docent oriented, mm-hmm. right? Like you don't have to be a scientist to volunteer at the zoo. And I think a lot of zoos right now and conservation organizations are really trying to embrace the idea that like citizen scientists or just getting anybody involved at any level in conservation is the whole point. That's why we have zoos and aquariums and all of these organizations. And so kind of taking a step back from like, we're an educational organization we're a conservation organization and we're a community organization. And we want to make sure that we're representing the community and inviting the community made a really big difference. And I think that Woodland Park Zoo is just a really good model of that. But like, number one, just bring people into the program. Like, you're never going to prepare people for disability. They're always going to feel hesitant until they meet somebody and spend time with somebody and realize that it's not a threat to them in any way to just share their space and their passion with somebody that's disabled.
This is great. I'm really happy that you reached out to talk about this, because this was just not on my radar. So, so cool. So. Well, let's talk a little bit about Microsoft. I know there's no like real good segue, but that's okay, because the magic of editing.
It's funny. It's actually a little ironic, and you don't have to include this story if you don't want to.
Yeah. Come on. But yeah, go ahead.
The way that I ended up finding out that there was a position at Microsoft was that one of the volunteers I supported at Woodland Park Zoo, their mom works at Microsoft. And I saw on LinkedIn that there was a position, and I was like, oh, I know her, and I'm familiar with, I write things, I've written articles and grant proposals and lesson plans, like maybe I could be a writer for Microsoft. So there is like actually a connection from the zoo to,
nice.
But it's not super direct. Yeah.
No. So you said you write for Microsoft. So does that mean you write? Tell me more about that.
Yeah. So content design is like kind of a new discipline. I didn't know what it was when I applied for the position, coming from like the education and then the nonprofit field. I had never heard of it. But what it means essentially is like writing the buttons and the interface that's inside the products. So if you can imagine like an engineer, somebody who codes a lot, they don't always have the best language for like customer facing usage. They know what things mean and they know how it's supposed to work, but they might not be super aware of how people would interpret that. And so it's my job to take it from engineer language to like customer facing language and make it as inclusive as possible so that people can use it without getting hung up or confused or any of that. And then I also write support documents for those things so that people can go troubleshoot on their own.
Nice. So then do you like support documents for these tools?
I do that. I do support documents for those tools. I write the buttons and stuff that are in the tools. And then the fun part, like my little passion projects that I get to work on, is trying to help kind of shift the mindset in the writing community at Microsoft of how we talk about disability and how we think about inclusion. So some examples of that are like destigmatizing the word disabled. Like it's okay to say disabled. Don't be afraid to say it. There's nothing wrong with being disabled. So like not saying it kind of implies that there is, or that it's like scary or bad. Just say it, like it's fine, which is a hard thing to get across to people, but we're working on it. We talk about like framing products not in age ranges, but in like support needs. So sometimes we'll talk about a product like Immersive Reader, which for anybody who's not familiar, it can like highlight words as you're reading, or break things into syllables, or change the color of the text in your document so that it's easier to read. And that might be said that it's for like a 7 to 12 age range or something like that. But that's not like super inclusive if we're thinking about, you know, adults who are dyslexic, who are more comfortable reading with, I use Immersive Reader because the white in Outlook hurts my eyes. Like I would rather not look at the white screen all day long. And so just trying to think about people's support needs instead of age range as like the main reason that we're changing things. And then that way, if we do have different settings for different different people, then it's based on, you know, do you need support for this, this, and this? Then like choose this higher level of support. Do you want to be totally independent? Like that's cool too. But it doesn't make anybody feel like, oh, I guess I'm at the 4-year-old level instead of the 30-year-old level. So like, I don't know, things like that that can sometimes come across as trivial. I think language sometimes people like to think of as like just, it's just semantics and it's not important. But it really does frame the way people think about, it just frames the way people think that we, language is how we form our thoughts and our experiences, and being intentional about it can really make a difference in how we view people.
Absolutely. Wow. Do you have any stories about how some educators have used the tools, or do you just want to highlight what the tools do?
Oh, I mean, I don't know. Like, whatever. I know that you said you used Immersive Reader with your students.
Yeah, I did. So, I don't know if you know this about me, but I taught 13 years in the classroom. I did 3 years as a district support specialist. So, just a number of schools, and I would help support students with IEPs, behavior, stuff like that. But when I was in the classroom, I taught in segregated, self-contained classrooms because my districts, they didn't have, like, if I wanted to work with students with intellectual disabilities, the only places they were in self-contained classrooms. So, you know, here I am, a self-contained teacher trying to include my kids, right? Mm-hmm. So I'd be like, you know, collaborating with the gen ed teacher to try to get them in and stuff like that. So I spent a lot of time as a special ed teacher in a special ed classroom. But we did use all of these, you know, well, at least the Immersive Reader. And we did speech to text. Trying to think of what other ones that we used specifically, but Immersive Reader was great because we could always, you know, some textbooks and stuff like that, online textbooks already has that feature, but sometimes they didn't. So we would like copy and paste it into the Immersive Reader and then they would like read it for them. Or we would assign lessons and like particular assignments to a student, and then the Immersive Reader could read off what we wanted them to do. And then they, you know, either, you use the prompt to answer the question or something like that. So that's basically what I used it for.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I love Immersive Reader. It's my favorite tool that we have just because I think it's the most applicable, like in a classroom setting all the time. For students with disabilities, they can use it in Edge. So just any web page that they go on, turn on Immersive Reader and have it read to them or highlighted for them so that they can read along easily. I used Immersive Reader with students that I've worked with to just reinforce their really basic like reading skills. They were able to read, but they had a really hard time like attending to the reading a lot of the time, especially, you know, like you mentioned, being a special ed teacher in a segregated classroom, you know, you're bouncing from student to student and, you know, maybe they read four words and then they're not doing that anymore and you're with somebody else. For me, the best thing about it was like the way that it helped people attend to what they were doing and like really stay engaged with it without like basically hand over hand support to make that happen. And it made them feel more independent to be able to like complete something and actually be like, no, I did that by myself, which is great. The other thing that I'm excited about right now is we just built Reading Progress, and it's a tool that students can use to record themselves reading out loud. And then they can rewatch the recording. They can decide if they like it or if they want to try it again. They can, try it several times and then they can submit that. And it gets returned to them with edits on it. So it's the words are highlighted to say, oh, you skipped this word or you said this word a couple times. They can go through and kind of redo it and see for themselves like the improvement from one practice to the next. So that's really fun to see folks use and grow without having to have again like that hand over hand kind of support.
Right. So are the texts that they read, are they self-selected?
The texts are assigned by educators, but it's anything that you could want to assign. So sure. Definitely if you have a quality educator who's doing a good job, then they're choosing text based on that student's interest and making it really tuned in.
Right. Yeah. And then so for the edits that come back, are they teacher edits or are they AI edits?
It's AI. Yeah. So okay. It interprets the student's speech and pronunciation and then turns it back over and says, okay, you read this word three times and you skipped that word or you mispronounced it or whatever.
That is really interesting. So is this a product that's out right now or it's developing?
Nope, it's out right now. So educators are getting started using it. We released it this last year, kind of after schools were already in session and stuff. And so we're expecting people to really pick it up and then we can see the kind of impact that it has and for who in the following school year. So I'm excited to see who it works for and what kind of impact it has.
Well, as a educator, that would have been really nice to have.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of educators use it for like basically running records. As you're probably familiar, everybody who listens is probably familiar with doing running records and like trying to be out in the hallway with one student taking notes about their reading and then like everybody's chaos in the other room. So this is like one way that you could use it is to do running records while you can manage the rest of your class.
Awesome. Anything else about the tools that you wanted to mention?
I mean, less about the tools and more about just like the framework at Microsoft and trying to like, Microsoft is a great company for disability. I think people are pretty aware of like the different initiatives that they have done. And Jenny Leigh Fleury is the lead accessibility director. She's deaf. Satya Nadella had a son who was disabled and unfortunately just passed this year. And so he had a big impact, Satya, the CEO of Microsoft, on just really caring about all of our products being inclusive and like everything having to go through an accessibility checklist. Everything has to be up to a certain amount of standards, which is really great. But there's still just, I think you and I and probably the people that listen to your podcast like are in a different place for what we understand inclusion to be than like the general community a lot of the time. I think about like inspiration porn or like stuff like that. That's kind of like a lot of people would be like, oh, that's so great. You know, the prom queen asked out the kid with Down syndrome or, you know, whatever. And it's like the nuance of that isn't quite illustrated for everybody yet. And that's kind of what we're working on the language side too, is just kind of trying to navigate away from that perspective, just like we did at the zoo, of people with disabilities as like somebody to pity and do things for, and to be much more focused on being a people with disabilities, being part of the community and people that we're working with, people that we're designing with and for. And it's not like a service, pat me on the back, like I'm special, angel wings. It's just like, that's what you do, because it's a decent proportion of the people that you're building products for. You know, 10, 15, 20%, depending on, you know, what you're looking at. It's a huge part of our user base.
Thanks for listening to this preseason bonus episode of Think Inclusive. Make sure you check out all of the really cool inclusive classroom tools that Microsoft has to offer. I've put a link in the show notes to a blog post that highlights some of the ones we talked about today. Can't get enough of Think Inclusive? Become a patron at patreon.com/thinkinclusivepodcast. Finally, follow us on the socials. We are just about on everything, including Facebook, Instagram, Threads, LinkedIn, and there is this other one. What is the name of it? I keep forgetting. Anyways, find us on the web at thinkinclusive.us. And if you want more information about inclusive education or how MCIE can partner with your school or district, go to mcie.org/contact. We'll be back next week with another preseason bonus. Enjoy the rest of your week. And remember, inclusion always works.
From MCIE.